24 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
This is Air America Radio's morning sedition for the time being. Our next guest is an Emmy Award-winning writer, comedian, and actor, now turned novelist. His first novel, The Shroud of the Thwacker, hits newsstands in October. Chris Elliott joins us in the studio this morning. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Chris, you had a brilliant show on the air called Get a Life that was taken off despite the fact that it was a great show. How'd that feel?
Oh, come on. You know.
I do know.
It is kind of a liberating thing, you know, to see the writing on the wall, because then you just kind of, you know, pull out all the stops and do whatever the hell you want. In my case, second season of Get a Life, you know, we pretty much just, I would come in, I remember, when I knew the show was going to be canceled, I would come in and I would see stuff in the script like, oh, you're going to be in a vat of chili, you know. And I'd go, no, I'm not. I'm canceled. I'm not going to do that. And so we would, you know, we'd end up, you know, inevitably ripping my head off and kicking it down the street because we had no ending. I would go home early.
Hey, Brendan, make note of that vat of chili for tomorrow. Vat of chili. So, you know, I love you. I think you're funny. I'm excited that you got a book out. Now, we are doing radio. Your father did radio. I imagine that you grew up in a radio studio to some degree, did you not?
Yeah, I did. And I did. So our whole house was actually a radio studio.
Is that true?
Well, no, you know what I remember the most about my dad? And I used to go in and I used to listen to him. My dad was part of Bob and Ray, this comedy team, and he was Bob, or I like to say, or Ray. I get the two of them confused. But I used to, summers, I never went to camp, but I used to go into his studio, and he used to sit me in front of the sound effects machine.
Oh!
Put, you know, headsets on me, and I'd just sit for hours and put these carts in and listen to, you know, 5 seconds of a Wolfman howl, you know, like every variation.
It was the greatest thing,
you
right?
know, or you know, punches. You
yeah.
Know.
I have.
Oh, you got something else? Wait a minute. He can't hear me. He doesn't have the headphones on.
I don't have my cans on.
Oh, put your cans on, man.
Cans.
What do we got? We got. Now I'm going to just do this. Yeah.
Why? Oh, there it is.
Oh, that. Wow, that brings back some of the memories. Yeah. But I got to tell you, those are newer.
Whoa.
Yes. Those are newer fights.
And it's all in one machine here. You don't have to pull tapes out and put them in.
That's right. Yeah. But when I was at school, whenever I used to fight with my friends, they were always amazed at the sound effects that I could come up with. Because, you know, did you really hit me just then? That was amazing.
You got to settle a dispute I've had with a couple of people for a long, long time. I want to focus on the book, but I got to ask you this. There was a bit that your father did called Mary Backstage Noble Wife.
Right.
Now,
right.
Was that the template for Mary Hartman?
No,
it wasn't.
Mary Backstage was a parody of radio soap operas.
Yeah.
And Mary Hartman was a parody of TV soap.
TV soap. Okay.
Right, so now, similar. Yeah, definitely similar. So the Shroud of the Thwacker.
Yes.
I would expect no less from you. what does that even mean? What is
it
about?
It's about a serial killer in the turn of the century, and Ripper was already taken.
No,
so he used Thwacker.
Is he bitter about Ripper being taken?
Yeah, right.
Well, he's from New York City, so okay. You know he wanted to coin his own phrase. No, it's a historical crime thriller that takes place in 1882. But I've virtually done no research on the time period whatsoever. So everything.
Why bother?
Exactly.
Why speculate?
Exactly.
You know? People have a short memory.
Pretty much
wait a
the
minute.
Way I've done my book reports when I was in school.
Now you got Teddy Roosevelt in this book.
Yes.
You've had a long-standing fascination with the Roosevelts. Why?
Yeah, you know, somebody pointed that out because I did do a one-man show about Franklin
FDR,
Roosevelt,
yeah.
You know, FDR one-man show. But the truth of that wasn't really, I don't have an obsession with the Roosevelts, but that one-man show was not really, I had seen this one-man show with Robert Vaughn doing FDR.
Sure. Man from Uncle?
Napoleon
Vaughn.
Solo was doing Franklin Roosevelt. And
right.
So my one-man show was really a parody of that. It wasn't really thinking, oh, I wanted to make fun of Franklin Roosevelt. It was more like I wanted to make
but
fun
you do
of,
a good job of making fun of Teddy in this.
Yes, I do make Teddy kind of a cartoonish character in this. And there's a number of people in this book. There's Liz Smith is in the book, and there's another person who I can't name, but she lives in the Dakota. Just put it that way.
How how many people do we know
right.
that live there?
Well, she's of Japanese
you
descent.
You did something
also.
About, oh, I was going to say, right. Roberta Flack?
Uh-huh. And she's rumored to have destroyed the greatest band that ever lived.
There you go.
Okay.
There you go.
So now I just drifted to New Hampshire for a minute. When
yeah,
I was coming
I wasn't
up,
listening either, so. Doesn't matter.
That's great. Your name again? No. I was listening, but when he brought up Teddy Roosevelt, there was a place up in New Hampshire we used to do comedy called TR's, and it was a restaurant owned by a guy who was obsessed with Teddy Roosevelt.
Really?
And in the restaurant, every part of the restaurant was plastered with Teddy Roosevelt paraphernalia, and the guy kind of dressed like him and had the. It was called TR's.
Oh,
it was
wow.
insane. So you'd stand up on stage surrounded by Teddy Roosevelt paraphernalia.
Right.
Well, sounds like a book signing opportunity.
Yeah, exactly.
You,
I was just let's get that address.
TR's, I think it's in New Hampshire.
All right.
So now what is the story? What happens to the serial killer in the book?
Well,
give away the ending.
Yeah. Sure. No. It's you know about my book's about the investigation of these unsolved murders that I'm saying took place in 1882, and the investigation was headed up by the chief of police Caleb Spencer, mm-hmm. who's head of the NCN. YPD, which stands for 19th Century New York mm-hmm. Police Department, and Liz Smith, his girlfriend, Teddy Roosevelt, and and they never solved it. And you know, at some point in my investigation, I discover a time machine. I'm hurled back into 1882 and possibly accused of the actual crimes myself.
Uh oh.
So that's
leave it
good.
At that.
Time travel. It's got all the elements.
It's
not
got
only that, you know, the 1882 New York Police Department was quite a piece of work by itself. Because actually, I think for a while there were two police departments in New York.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Actually, it was
two police departments.
You may very well be right. But,
yeah, but
so, you know, I watched the History Channel a couple of times, and that was about
just
it.
Just make notes. It's not even about what time. It's not even a decade-specific thing. It's like, now we're in ancient Rome, and she
right.
drove her car
exactly.
up to the Parthenon.
Right. And yeah. I mean, the challenge here was to try to weave a story that made any kind of sense. And, you know, I'm not sure it does, but it does have a beginning and a middle and an end.
No. At least it says that. Finally.
It says the beginning, it says the middle, about halfway through, and then it says the end, just so you know.
So, but you're comedically, you've always been sort of, you've come from that place where it's sort of timeless. It can be absurd. It doesn't need to have a narrative structure. I think
right.
you have a lot more freedom like that, and it's also some of the most challenging comedy to pull off.
I guess so. I mean, it's always sort of come naturally for me, and I don't know why. I think it started at Letterman, where there was always this kind of strange... You know, I started on that show playing this guy who was unbalanced, who worked on the staff, who desperately wanted to be a TV star,
yeah.
And would come out and bother Dave from time to time. And there was a lot of truth to that, though,
yeah.
in who I was.
Yeah.
So even to me, you know, reality and what I've started to make up are, you know, is kind of a blurred thing.
Now,
in my
life. Are you doing more TV? You got any movies coming up?
I'm developing another show for Warner Brothers. But, you know, the truth is I've been in development almost every year since Get a Life. And and it's very hard to get. I'll go in and I'll talk to a network, and they'll all say they loved Get a Life. They grew up with it. It was their favorite show. And then the next thing they'll say is, you know, we don't want you to do that show anymore. You know, we want to see you with a wife and kids and settled down and all that, which is, you know, a dangerous area. For me to venture into.
Do you have
I do have a wife and kids, but you know, for the general public to accept me as that, I think would be a large challenge.
It's a great challenge, though. You could be the guy. Maybe you should have like a delusional wife and kids. They're not even real. They're just a hallucination that comes sometimes.
Maybe that's the case.
I'm brainstorming
sure.
with you here. I'm
that's
trying to
true.
Work with
that's
you
That's very funny. And maybe suddenly you're making me think, do I have a wife and kids? I know I'm putting one through college. But
wow, that
somebody
must be
I'm
wild.
Putting through college.
Yeah, that comes home occasionally.
Exactly.
And asks for money.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. How old are your kids?
18 and 15.
Wow, they funny?
Yeah, they're both much funnier than I am. They both want to go into the business.
Oh, my God. What do you say to that?
Encouraging or discouraging?
I can't discourage them, but at the same time, you know, it's such a hard business for anybody, and for women especially, it's a very difficult business. But, you know, the thing I keep telling them is just to try to, you know, do more than just act or anything else. You know,
they're both
girls? Try to write both girls.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so the 15-year-old knows more about comedy than I do. I
really?
Mean, she tells me, she turns me on to, you know, who's hot and what's, you know, happening, you know.
And do you think that they're generally as funny as she thinks they are? Do you think that comedy is as healthy as it once was? Because you're one of these interesting guys that actually has the opportunity to see really a generational history of comedy because you grew up with it.
Right.
And
right.
Now you've seen this this crashing of the wave. Obviously, there are a few people, my contemporaries and people that you know that are very funny. But in
right.
general, culturally, where do you think comedy's at?
Well, I do think it's a cyclical thing. I mean, I just did this thing with Alan Zweibel, who's, you know, an idol of mine and was one of my heroes, you know, one of the original writers of Saturday Night Live. And it's, you know, the trends, you know, in comedy have always changed. You know, Saturday Night Live changed up everything. You know, people were watching, you know, the Carol Burnett show before that happened.
Yeah, right.
You know, and suddenly that was this whole new thing. So, you know, I don't know if Bob and Ray, if they had started right now, would necessarily have a following, you know, but maybe 5 years from now, if they did, they would, you know, it changes all the
time. It's
hard
to know. Do you like, are there shows that you're into right now? I mean,
I can't watch sitcoms. To me, it's like watching work. I can hear a network note. I can hear a rewritten line. And in some cases, literally, I can hear the executive producer laughing off to the side, you
right.
know, while the thing's happening.
Well, have you done that with your daughters? Have you said, let's play network? Pitch where you're the executive and maybe the older one plays the show creator and the younger one is the talent.
I'm gonna write that down. Network pitch.
No,
actually, what I'm trying to pitch is a show with a 18-year-old and a 15-year-old so I can get them started in the business.
Perfect.
And get them off
there
the
you go.
I hope that they let you do that.
You know who they have? They turn me on to. You know who I like is Stella. Do you like those guys?
Yeah, I know those guys.
I like those guys.
Personally, I had problems with one of them.
Oh, okay.
But
I don't know them personally.
Yeah.
But that kind of humor makes me laugh.
That's
a
sort
lot.
Of like you like their sketches or their dynamic because they do. A
I
kind
like
of
their
a
dynamic.
Lounge,
I like the fact
show.
That it's like what the Marx Brothers were right now. You
yeah,
know, it's
yeah.
like a different, it's an updated version.
Well, I wish
that.
One of them didn't talk, but I
right.
mean, but outside of that, they're great. So are you going to be sneaking in any movies that we should heads up for?
I just did a thing in Scary Movie 4.
Oh, great.
Thank you.
Good for you.
Thank you very much. Let me put it, I don't turn anything down.
Uh-oh.
You and Michael Caine. That's
yeah,
it. Hey, there's nothing wrong with working. All right. Our guest has been Chris Elliott. The book is The Shroud of the Thwacker. You can look for him in Scary Movie 4 and perhaps, you know, in a development situation if
Coming
you live
soon.
In Hollywood. So thanks for joining us. It's
thanks,
great
Mark.
Having
thanks
you.
Thanks a lot.
Mark.
Appreciate
thanks
it.
A lot.